6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is a repeat guest, one that I'm absolutely excited to be engaging with again. So Rusty, good morning, how are you, man?
I'm good, mate. You well?
I'm very well, thank you. Rusty, and I'm sure there'll be many people that have heard of you already, but for those that haven't, maybe just a brief insight around who you are and what you do.
I'm sure there's lots that haven't heard of me. Who am I? A father, husband, coach, help coaches, love coaching, guest work with lots of different sports, super lucky in what I do, work for myself. That probably gives a slightly different lens for anyone that's a coach developer, because obviously if people come to you, it's a different interaction to you trying to sell something to them. I guess, and probably had some helpful experiences along the way of working pretty hard from a young age, of being a teacher for a couple of years, of coaching in pathways, of doing coach development, of playing and maybe not loving that experience. I guess lots of things along the way that have probably influenced how and why I think like I think at the moment.
Amazing. Ross, you know, something I want to kind of touch on from the get-go is obviously, you know, the differences between a coach and a coach developer. And I think, you know, I've seen a quite a big trend recently where a lot of coaches are trying to step into coach development roles, but maybe not necessarily ready to help other coaches. And they still want to kind of have a bit of the limelight in terms of managing and leading on the practice side of things themselves, rather than supporting the individual doing that role, if that makes sense. What are your observations around it and what are your thoughts on that?
I think there's like this spectrum of options, isn't there? Like people argue about coach developer, coach educator, mentor, all these words, I guess. I guess for me, it's probably, you know, let's say that you were supporting me as a coach, like, yeah, I guess just like what would a great relationship look like? What would the ground rules look like? What would be helpful? And that might involve anything from you observing me with a clipboard and telling me where I'm going wrong to me observing you with a clipboard and telling you where you're going wrong. And I guess all the stuff in between. I probably have a little bit of a preference for, maybe it's because I'm hanging on to my coaching, just getting on the pitch with people and doing a bit with them. So there's a couple of football coaches that I work with and in academies, and they'll be really good around Rusty today. I'd love a bit of feedback on this. It would be great if you could do a bit of this, because actually it'd be really helpful for me to see how you handle these two kids as an example. So I guess it's, for me, it's not fixed. I think we can probably ask better questions at the start. You know, if there's one thing you could share with me that would help me work better with you, what's the one thing you definitely don't want me to do? This is what I'm thinking about for the next level of my coaching. So I guess just establishing that stuff at the start is usually quite helpful. And by the way, people might not know, and what they want might not be what they need. And so, you know, that's not to say that that's ever fixed. Something that Brunchy said the other day that really resonated with me. He said two things, actually. He talked about in football, there is no other world where there's a level of surveillance of players and coaches. And that is true. Like, kids don't have every lesson videoed in school, do they? And the second one was just like, it's just constantly changing. So one of the things I started asking the people I work with a bit more is, oh, what's changed since the last time we met? Which is a really helpful question, because it turns out loads has changed since the last time we met. So again, just like rechecking in on that relationship, not in a, I wouldn't do it in too formal a way. People would call it contracting. I probably have a preference for it to be less formal than that, and much more around like actually us setting each other challenges. So perhaps, you know, you might set me the challenge of, we had it the other day at SGP where one coach had been generally using a command style of coaching. So we gave him three tokens, and once he'd used his three tokens, every time he used a command, he would exit the pitch. So it might be that there's a challenge like that from you to me, but also from me to you might be actually, I'd love you to. My challenge from me to you is that, Yaz, every time I come to you and ask you a question as a coach, you're able to give me one useful clue as a coach developer that's going to help me. So I guess for me, and I maybe haven't answered it in a really linear way, I just think I would want to explore that relationship lots.
No, but I think there's lots in there. And I think, you know, it just got me thinking, especially, you know, around the contracting piece and, you know, maybe not making it so formal. So I guess in the beginning of that space, if you like, what are some of the things that, you know, you'd really look to kind of nail in on? And I know that you said, one of the great questions you talked about there was, what is it that you maybe don't want me to do? Because I think that bit's really key, right? Sometimes as coach developers, we do have observations, we do have ideas, and we do have thoughts around what we're seeing. But actually, that might not align to what might be best for the coach in that moment, whether because it's the right thing for them or whether they're actually not ready for it, if that makes sense. So I think there's, you know, an element of priming the part, you know, the coach in this case on how we're going to work with them. So, but then I think another thing you touched on there, and I'm really interested to kind of explore further, is that challenge for you. What does that look like from the coach giving you the challenge? You know, what can you just elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah. So just while you were speaking there, maybe contract softly. Don't like have it, you know, this is going to be our contract for the next 12 months. I mean, that's ridiculous, quite frankly. So much changes. And then I wrote like intentions are invisible unless you ask about them. So probably want to understand that. And also things like values and beliefs are relatively, can be invisible. And so I'd probably want to understand that stuff pretty quickly about people. What's important to you? What are you measuring yourself on? If there's two things you measure yourself on that you've never measured yourself on before in today's session, what would they be? And yeah, what type of things you want me to notice? What do you want me to ignore? And then again, I guess I might have to scaffold them, but yeah, I think it would be helpful. Like if we're talking about coaches having challenges and going after things and stretching themselves, then it should definitely be true of me, shouldn't it? Like, Rusty, I wonder if you can do this. I wonder, you know. So we had a real good one at SGP actually, and came about because one of the coach developers. So let's imagine I'm the coach developer. I said to you, Yaz, "Oh mate, do you mind if I give you a bit of feedback?" So ask permission. And you went, "No, can we wait till the end of the day?" And I was like, "No one's waiting till the end of the day. Like that's not happening." And so we actually agreed it that so the challenge was this, that you would give me three timeouts. And when we the timeout lasted a maximum of 1 minute. So this was never going to be a long interaction. I would audio myself doing it, and then we would both later on like sit down and chat around your feedback to me on the interaction. So just a, I guess a simple way of, look, A, I wanted there to be, I didn't want someone to say I'm going to wait to the end of the day, but B, I wanted the coach developers to be able to actually do it really skillfully in a short period of time with impact. And I wanted to record some stuff because I wanted to be able to then reflect on it for people so they could go, oh, okay, yeah, that was pretty cool. Actually, oh, I could have done that a bit more effectively. Or so I guess anything's on really. And if I was working in a, let's say I was working in a club, in the same way I would probably design, I would have challenge cards. I was with Steve Fraser the other day at Arsenal as a goalkeeper coach. He's got some brilliant little challenge cards for the goalkeepers. They're so good. And again, you would want coaches to have challenge cards, and you would probably want heads of coaching to have challenge cards as well. So yeah, I think again, let's just normalize that every day we're all trying to get better. We're going to try something. We're experimenting is really normal around here, because otherwise we just keep doing the same old stuff. And by the way, there's so many people doing the same old stuff. So
Just
many people.
elaborate on that, because you know, because I mean, I've got an idea of what you're talking about, and there is, I guess, an essence of many cookie cutter approach to kind of how coaching looks or what it perceived to be looked like. So you know, just elaborate on that a little bit, but also, you know, if we take it a step back, you know, you mentioned something earlier around getting the coaches to really think about how they want you to support them. Now, it's something I've been playing around with a lot lately, in proposing different, trying to come up with different ways to articulate how to ask that question, right? In terms of what, you know, how would you like me to support you as a coach developer? But I think one of the challenges for them is, well, do they even know what support looks like? Because actually, for a lot of them, they're in environments, even if they've got coach developers or heads of coaching or people around them. If everyone's pretty much doing the same things, then it's often that the support might also look the same, if that makes sense.
And I think I said that earlier, like what they want and what they need might be two different things. Maybe you could create some archetypes, couldn't you? You could actually go, we've got six or seven options around a coach developer. We've got the educator who will have a clipboard, and at the end of the session will generally, you know, he might not ask you so many questions, he'll probably tell you what he would have done. We've got the metacognition. And they do this, or we, you know, we could create some different, you know, we could have the questioner, we could have the, you know, do you want a bit of both? But I do think again, it's a bit like players, isn't it? Like I've asked so many players, okay, cool. How do you plan your week to get the best out of coaches? And they look at me like I'm from a different planet. Like same with coaches. How you know, especially in a club where you've got a head of coaching available to you 24/7, pretty much. How are you planning your week to get the best out of your head of coaching? And people often don't know how to do that. So again, as you described there, you might have to support them. Okay, well, let's imagine Monday. So you know, what could you do on a Monday? You haven't got a training session. Well, where in the day could you find time that you think would be helpful? Or maybe it's actually I'm gonna sit down with my plan for the session and get the head of coaching and ask him, give me three things that would make this session even better. And maybe on, you know, on the Tuesday, I've got the head of coaching coming. So actually, I'm probably going to get him to video the first 5 minutes because I've been really struggling with starting my sessions well. So I'm just going to get him to video the first 5 minutes and we're going to chat about that. Okay. Wednesday. Okay. I'm co-coaching with someone else. So maybe on the Tuesday after that session, we can kind of agree on the co-coaching roles and actually he can give us a bit of feedback on that. So I mean, you could do that. That's easy. The same as a player could go, okay, like Monday after the session, I'm going to check in with the out of possession coach because I really need to work on some of these skills, and I'm going to see if they can do 10, 15 minutes with me on that. That's like, and of course, people don't know how, you know, when it starts, when Kevin Bowring, RIP, first comes to watch me as a coach developer, I'm thinking I'm going to lose my job today. He's definitely going to find out that I'm awful at coaching. And we, you know, he's just like, and eventually I've, you know, a couple of weeks in, I've worked out how me and Kevin can work together really well. And he's been one of the most influential people in my life. And so, you know, it's a process, isn't it? One-off thing, isn't it? It's just checking in on that relationship as well. What's working, what's not working. Yeah, and I guess creating space for that as well.
I think it's fascinating because obviously, you know, there is a lot of management of self-perception, right? In, especially within coaching and especially in football in particular. And I think, you know, I'll speak on football specifically because I'm not sure about other sports, but there is definitely an ego attached to a lot of coaches. In fact, all of us really to at different levels. So I think being able to be vulnerable enough to receive that feedback is just as important. So, you know, for maybe coaches listening to this now, just maybe give sharing some thoughts on, well, how do they become more effective as, if you like, coach developees rather than developers?
Yeah, and so, and just when you spoke there made me think a lot about, like, you know, receiving and filtering and receiving feedback is also a really helpful skill for players and coaches again, isn't it? So understanding, actually, if I, you know, when I first receive feedback, if I give at least 30 seconds before I reply, that might separate stimulus and response and might mean that you don't get a really overly emotional reaction from me as I go, you know, as I get into you a bit. So, yeah, again, I think those are skills, aren't they, that we should be helping coaches and players with? Probably a good like question to reflect on is, how am I helping my players be really good at receiving feedback? Because they might not have the skills. They might have, especially the teenage boys. So, coach a lot of teenage boys. Like they got a lot of the, they got all the emotions, and very few of the skills. So receiving feedback. Oof, wow. Like if I was good as that as a player, I would have been a lot better. If I was able to go, okay, I'm going to filter that. That's actually really important for me. I need to do something about that, and I can use my coach to help me with that. My God. I would have been a much better player. I'd been like compounding stuff, wouldn't I, instead of just slowly depreciating.
Well, I think it's a fine point, isn't it? Because, you know, you can give feedback. And I think often one of the challenges I see with coaches is if when they try and give that feedback, they just assume that it should just be taken on board and understood and accepted as it is. And sometimes it's, well, the feedback might be valuable, but it's only as valuable as the person who's receiving it sees it, right? And I think, you know, something I talk about a lot is in the context of trying to keep players or participants engaged in your sessions or in your conversations is, well, they need to see relevance, because I think for me, like, relevance drives engagement. So if, you know, without knowing the why behind the information, they're not really going to be bothered about the what or the how. So I guess from that perspective, you know, what are some strategies that you've maybe kind of worked with or seen coaches been really effective in terms of developing a better understanding of the relevance for the individual? Because I think one of the, I guess, things that we can be guilty of as coaches, we often see things through our lens and not through their experience.
Yeah, I think communication's about the other person, as you've said there, really. I think I'd have some stuff around feedback that's helpful. So for me, I would think about it being kind, helpful, timely, specific. And that's what, within all of that, it's probably got to be aligned to some kind of, it's probably got to be goal orientated. The way that I've found that helps me, and it probably ties into what we spoke about before we started, was I'll generally design feedback as questions to start with, to get them thinking. So as an example, I watched a coach the other day, and my we just got up on the phone yesterday about a bit of it. And my headline question was like, How can we have the same level of attention in the tactical part of the session as we do in the free play bit? So I watched some players who, if I looked at them in the tactical part of the session, I would have gone there about a 5 or a 6 out of 10. And then when I saw them free play, they're about a 9 or a 10. and they were ridiculous, and their attention and their ability to just do magical stuff was ridiculous. But because we've got this other part of the session that's a bit slowed down, can be a little bit more coach led, can be, then it's not, they're not paying as much attention to that as they could. So they're actually perhaps not getting, you know, learning as well as they could. So that was just my question. I was like, okay, let's think about practice design, coach behaviors, co-coaching. What are the two or three things we could do to take this current session where they're, you know, where we're at a five or a six and maybe make it better? And then it becomes this kind of act of co-creation, doesn't it? It doesn't become an act of me telling you how to coach us. Because you understand the kids in your context way better than me. So I'll generally try and design questions. You know, if there's one thing that would make us better at co-coaching, what would it be? If there's two things we could add to the session plan and one thing we would take away, what would it be? I'm not going to rip up your session plan. I've been to lots of places where I think the session plan's utter shit. But I'm definitely not going to go, it's utter shit. I'm going to go, okay, let's imagine we had to make the session plan like 23% better, and we could add two things and take one away. What would we do? Then it becomes a problem solving for the coaches, as opposed to me telling them stuff. And I'll give them options around the questions. So I might go, look, here's some questions, here's some options. I think I'm quite good at designing questions.
And I think it's an important skill, right? And I think something I talk about a lot in both linked to what we spoke about earlier in terms of theming your sessions based on those, but also in checking and clarifying understanding of the whether it be a coach or the player, right? And that's something I always talk about is, you know, within my, if you like, my coaching philosophy, and I don't really like, you know, the idea of having one necessarily, but I guess it would be described as one, is one of the pillars is around show and tell. So, you know, I can tell you all day long what I want to see or what we're going to try and do here, but actually I think with everything that has been said, there should be some sort of visual representation attached to it. Now, that could be me sharing with you a demo, or you know, whether full speed, half speed, or whatever way we want to do it, or whether it's actually you sharing with me your understanding of what I'm telling you. And, you know, I guess the common response to what I do is it takes a little bit of time. But would you rather spend more time on something that you know they're going to get, or less time on something that you're not sure about?
Yeah, I mean, show me beats tell me, doesn't it? And then it's interesting, again, we were at SGP last week and we're doing coaching craft and we bring in teams and the coaches work. We had a group of four coaches, never worked together with a group of kids they've never worked with, playing in a quarterfinal, semifinal and a final with some training and some meetings and all of that stuff. And what I noticed after day one was, if I was a kid, I wouldn't have known what was important. I wouldn't have known what to pay attention to. So of course, you know, within a session or then there's lots of information available, isn't there? But understanding A, what's landed. So a good question to think of as a coach is, how am I currently landing? And then B, what's important? Tell me what you've heard. So instead of saying, does that make sense? You know, please tell me what you've heard. Show me what you've heard. And I was just coaching this week with a coach who I think he assumes that everything that they, and it was more around the stuff off the pitch. He'd tell them stuff and then they'd all come to me and go, when are we doing this? What are we doing this? Do we need our bags? Where do we leave our boots? And I was like, it's just the illusion of communication, isn't it? He's told them some stuff. He could have just gone, okay, what do you think the one or two most important things in the next hour to do are? What have you heard? Tell the person, you know, or even, you know, we take it in a coaching context, like end of the meeting, like speak to the person next to you, tell them the one most important thing from this meeting for you and the game tomorrow to help us win the game. I just want to check what's landed. Because currently I'm not a mind reader. So, yeah, it's obviously a really kind of important coaching skill, isn't it?
100%. I think it's something that's quite interesting about that I've started doing over the recent months as well. After each interaction, whether it be with a coach or a player, I always finish off with, well, you know, what were your most useful takeaways from today's interactions? Because I think sometimes if they're not fully engaged in the conversation, and if it's taken me a while to realise that, then I'm probably not doing a good job in observing. But hopefully if I've observed it early enough, you know, kind of aligned to what you're saying, I really want to know what's landed, and it might not be something that I've intended to land. So I need to be sure, right? Yeah. What am I saying? What are they hearing? Yeah. And what are they taking away from? Because sometimes, it, like, you know, as we do, we have conversations, and something someone says sparks a thought about something else, and so on and so forth. But you know, I think that bit's really important. And I think the wording as well, and what's been your most useful takeaway, you know, just automatically aligns their minds to the idea that, okay, even if they thought it was useless, now they've got to search for something that was useful from the conversation or the interaction.
Yeah. What, you know, I tutor a bit, and I'll ask, you know, what's the part of that? Which part of this do you least understand? I used to be a, does that make sense? So I was over in San Fran in September, and I watched Greg Fika coach, and it was just a startling realization for me that I'm generally terrible at this stuff we're now talking about. And Fiki did, he was doing scrum stuff. And then, like, honestly, every 7 or 8 minutes, he'd go, cool, just going to give you 1 minute to walk, chat to someone else, write down the stuff that you've taken from this so far. And I was like, that is so helpful. And 100%, because my mind's at 1,000 miles an hour. I need to do that. Anyway, I completely forgot to do it till January this year. And I had a session, and Claire Murphy came in and gave me a bit of feedback. And Claire said, can I give you a bit of feedback? And I was like, yeah, cool. And she said, I think you need to create some more pauses for people. And I was like, oh, I said I was going to do that in September. I haven't done it for so long. So I was like, right, that's it. So I got my phone, and I was delivering next week, and I texted two people that I was delivering with next week. I was like, cool, next week when we're delivering, we're having timeouts. I need to create them. Please, like, hold me accountable to this. It's really important to me. And because I've done it now a few times, I'm doing it, like, really regularly now. We could do it now. We could go, look, we'll give the listeners 30 seconds to write down one thing they found useful so far. I mean, you could stare at each other in silence for 30 seconds. It should be a little bit awkward.
But just talk about that. You know, you obviously, given that pause, given time to basically, you know, I guess, collect their thoughts and align themselves to what's been the takeaways in the conversation, is obviously really important, or in the interaction itself. What are some considerations for you in terms of where you slot those in? Because I mean, sometimes they could be quite spontaneous and in the moment kind of thoughts. Actually, this is a great moment for them to pause. But I often kind of challenge coaches, you know, how skillful can you be in your planning? How deliberate and intentional can you be in your planning that actually these are things that you're putting in place at certain moments? Now, I think one thing I would kind of say also with them is, you know, you have a plan, but don't feel like you have to stick to it black and white and, you know, to the T, because actually that's not how coaching works. That's not how things work. You have to respond to what's happening in front of you and not what you see in your head, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, St. George's Park last week's a great example, isn't it? You coach with three other coaches you've never coached with. You've got some kids turning up who you've never coached before. You're playing against opponents you have no idea about. And if you lose the first game, you're into the plate. And I asked the coaches, how well planned do you think you are? And they were like, I said, out of 11, how well planned are you? They said 8. And I was thinking, it's like a 2 or a 3. But their version of planned is different to mine. So what they think planning is different to what I think planning is. And so I think about planning softly. I think about being prepared, not planned, so that, and it'll happen with me loads, especially if I'm delivering like with the slides. I will have to apologize at the start to anyone who loves slides in order. And I will have to go, look, I'm not going to follow the order of the slides. I will be adapting. If anyone is going to find that uncomfortable, please let me know and I can kind of help you through this. I mean, for me, it's responding, isn't it? It's coaching. Like, if you notice that, oh, yeah, a few light bulbs have been going off for people, you go, should we just take like a 2 minute break now? And it seems like some stuff's landed here. Like, it'd be great maybe to just with the person next to you chat about the one thing that you think might be helpful in your environment. And then I'll maybe ask 2 or 3 of you to share in the next, you know, in 3 minutes time. Mm. If I see that people are like looking at me, staring blankly at me, I might actually go all the way back to the start. Or I might go, my God, this is completely irrelevant. I'm really sorry. Like, you know, put your hand up if you're finding any of this helpful, you know. Oh, no one's put their hand up, right? We need to move on to something else, which is, of course, why before I do anything, I generally would ask, like, what do you think is going to be helpful? What's your biggest problem? What's your stuff you're doing at the moment that you're most proud of? So that I want to find stuff that's meaningful for people. The reality, and you'll see it loads, like every coach has got these problems they need to solve. They're all generally quite similar. Lots of them are in the social corner. Like, let's help people with the problem that's causing them lack of sleep or stress or whatever it might be. And it's different for different. I had a guy the other day ring me say, I love this. He was like, Rusty, I know he's loving coaching. And then recently I started co-coaching with my best mate and I don't want him to be my best mate anymore. And so he's got a co-coaching problem that he needs to solve, hasn't he? Other people have got the teenage brain problem. Some have got the parental problem. Like, we've all got these things. And I guess I want to try and help people solve the problems they have in front of them at this moment in time. Because the reality is, like, they may not be involved in coaching in 5 years if they don't solve these problems now.
No, I think you're spot on. I think within that, it's also recognizing that problem-solving piece is so key, and, you know, especially in coaching now, in many respects. We talk a lot about we want to see more players making decisions, and we want to see coaches making more effective decisions as well.
Yeah, same as players, isn't it? It's pattern matching. We as coaches, like, oh, I've seen this before. Oh, when the teenage boys start like getting really into each other, I have three or four options. I'm going to try this one first. So I guess my nudge to everyone is like, keep putting yourself in as many tough situations as possible. Not too tough, but, you know, that's why I like coaching different age groups, different abilities, with different coaches is super helpful for you, isn't it? This, you don't just suddenly have this ability to adapt. You don't suddenly have loads of options. You don't start on day one as a ex-pro and have millions of options. You probably have less options than everyone else because you're an ex-pro, quite frankly, especially if you stayed at one club. That's what I'm interested in helping coaches with is options. Here's the problem. So the problem is, how do we make our session planning better? Two things to add, one thing to take away. And I might be able to add some stuff when they've gone and go, have you ever thought about this? This might be helpful for you. So I guess I'm obsessed with like adding as many options as I can have. But I do understand that not everyone's obsessed with this as I am. I guess that's some of the stuff I thought about when you spoke that.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it's really, I'm completely on board with what you're saying. I think options are great. And I think what tends to happen with, and I look at conversations we have around different generations of coaches coming through, especially through the coach education pathways, where I remember when I first started coaching, it was almost like, this is how you do it. This is what it should look like. And this is, if anything other than this is not right. Whereas now it's a lot more freeing. It's a lot more creative, a lot more ownership on the coaches to decide what it looks like for them. And I think within that also, then you get the situation of, well, what does good look like? Well, good is contextual. It's personalized to you, personalized to the individuals that you're working with. But also what good looks like for you in this environment might be different for what good looks like in that environment, because the needs of the participants is different, right? So, I mean, you know, in developing those options, I always say, right, you know, you don't have to have all the answers, but you need to have a way of doing something that you're trying to do. And if you don't have at least one way, then now you're going to really be struggling.
Yeah, if we look at it in really, let's simplify, let's pick a really simple example. Someone turns up late for training. Like, what are your options? Like, I know loads of people that immediately go to punishment. I would rarely go to punishment. I would almost immediately go to checking in with, are you okay? Is everything all right? I guess there are other options. You might go, oh, cool, you know, Rusty, you know, jump in the room. Everyone else in the room, just share back what you've heard in the meeting so far with Rusty, just so we can get him back up to speed. Like, you know, I could send Rusty away and go, Rusty, it's late. It's unbelievable that you're late. Off you go. Don't bother coming to training. I've seen all of those things. Like, they're all options, aren't they? And then it's, you know, it's when and why. So I guess our, you know, way of thinking about coaching is with the Premier League stuff, very simple, like noticing. It's the most important coaching skill. Like, can't see anything, you know, can't solve a problem you haven't seen. decision making, like what option am I going to choose, and then skillful interactions. So can I skillfully like have that interaction and tell Yaz to do 20 press-ups for being late or laps or whatever it might be. Yeah, I mean, that's what we're trying to help coaches do. And again, I'm lucky enough I get to spend, as you do, with loads of time with other coaches, and I just steal really good ideas off them. And I steal really good ideas off kids, which is why I would almost, you know, when I'm coaching, my first instinct is always to go, what's next level of this game? Give me one way we can make the game better. So anyone got a great idea to like, we could do one more thing we could change in the scoring system that would make this? And I'll just like steal ideas. It happened the other day. We've got obviously our coaching craft stuff that we've done a bit of work on around some of the coaching skills, and we've got some icons around it. And one of them is the goldfish bowl. And someone said, oh, Rusty, what's a goldfish bowl? And I found myself desperate to answer it as a coach because, you know, I need to be the person that provides all the solutions. And I was like, oh, what do you think the goldfish bowl could be? And then the room just gave me loads of really good ideas. And I was like, oh, thank God I asked. Like, I could have just told them what I think it is. And yeah, I mean, that's the hard bit of coaching, isn't it? I remember vividly my first ever meeting. You know, I've not coached before. I'm coaching England sevens, which is ridiculous. And I'm like, I've written everything on a whiteboard so that no one can deviate from Rusty's plan. Like, no one is deviating from my plan. There is no time in the meeting for anyone to ask any questions. We are fully divergent. I do not want anyone else's opinion. I'm telling them what we're doing. We're going to go outside. We're going to do it. I mean, I'm not risking it going off plan. Of course, that is how we all start out, I would imagine, unless you're like a rock star. And then gradually you start to become way more comfortable with the divergent bit. Oh, what do you think about that, Yaz? Oh, tell me more. Any other options? What other option could we try off this line out? And you get good at then going, okay, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to commit to do? And that's the coaching part, isn't it? And of course, like different, you know, if you're playing a game tomorrow, I might not be going, okay, well, what are all the different options we could do? Because it's probably a bit late 24 hours for a game. These are the types of things I guess we're wrestling with a lot as coaches. I definitely am all the time. Like, how divergent do I go? Like, how much do I like give people information? When do I need to? When don't they know? As you said, like, when don't they know how to use a coach developer? And I might go, look, here's a bit of a suggestion. This is what I found has worked with people. Shall we give it a go? I can still do that hopefully in a kind way. I don't have to do that in a, oh my God, yes, you haven't even thought about how you're going to use a coach developer. Oh my God, I'll sort it all out for you. Jesus Christ. Because all of, you know, even this, like, you know, we spend a lot of time thinking about the what. So I've really just described the what. And then by me and you playing it out, like show me beats, tell me, then we're starting to talk about the how. So how am I going to deliver that message? How am I going to do divergent? And again, maybe a good reflective question for coaches is, how much do you think about the how? So, okay, in this bit, we're going to play this rondo game and I'm going to give feedback to individuals on their first touch, let's say. Well, that's the what. Okay, how am I going to do that? Where am I going to be standing? Am I going to ask permission? Am I going to get them to give me feedback first? Am I going to create a system where if their first touch is awesome, they shout out yee-haw? And, you know, if it isn't, then they shout out something else. I don't know, like, but I think everything starts with awareness. So I would probably want them to give the feedback first. Am I going to practice that beforehand? In our coaches planning meeting, is Yaz going to play the part of the person with the first touch? And I'm going to play the part of the coach. Are we going to practice that? Are we going to do show me? Or are we just going to like imagine it? And hopefully if we imagine it, we'll all get better at it. So again, go back to what do you think planning is? Maybe planning should involve at least three role plays from the session. I think that would make planning better. I'm way more likely that if I do it in the classroom, you know, if I practice my first minute, my introduction, it's probably going to be better when I do it outside, quite frankly. And if we are coaches and we believe in deliberate practice, then we should definitely be doing it ourselves.
I think it's a great point. And I think, you know, I think the part of the challenge is, like I said, finding the balance. And you know, if you put a nail on the head, really, in terms of some coaches don't really think about how to use a coach developer. You know, it's not even something they've really had to think about. And I think one of the challenges that I often find as well is that especially if you've got coaches who've not necessarily worked at specifically any level, but if they've been doing it for a while, and in some environments when they've been doing it for a while, they can often be viewed as the person with the knowledge. So what tends to happen for them, in my observations, is, well, they often don't get challenged. So now come into a space where they're now having to be, you know, collaborating with another coach or even working with a coach developer in terms of supporting them, that can be quite a challenging process for them, right? Because they're not often used to receiving that feedback. They're not often even considering, well, what would it look like for me to get someone else to bounce off? So, you know, I like the way that you frame it. And, you know, I do a similar thing when I do go out and observe coaches in particular. I'll say, well, look, here's a couple of options for you. These are not the only options that we can explore, but this is how I've maybe played the role of a coach developer before. This is what I've seen. You know, I've got my own perceptions of what I think is ineffective and effective, more effective use of time. But ultimately, this is your time. You know, how do you want to spend it with me, sort of thing? And really let them take lead on that whole process in terms of, right, what do you want to get from this? You know, if you're not sure what you want to get from this, not a problem. We can explore some options in terms of where we can look. But I think then going back to the framework of, right, well, should we explore the coaching behaviors? Should we explore the outcomes for the players? Should we explore some different areas, or is it something else that, you know, has piqued your interest in? And kind of just go on that journey with them, right? And I think importantly, it's also recognizing that, like you said, sometimes the coaches have fascinating ideas. Maybe they're just not quite there yet in terms of how to connect the dots. Yeah. Where hopefully, the role of the coach developer might be, okay, cool, you know, this is not about my knowledge. This is about just piecing together what you've already got there. And just, it might not even be anything major, and often it's not. It's just something, sometimes minor tweaks to the practice design where it creates more realism or more dynamic nature to the decisions that the players are having to make, or, you know, those different aspects of the whole session in itself. Then, or it might be actually, do you know what? Like you said, in a great idea around the tokens, you've only got X amount of opportunities to do this type of interaction, and I can see this is a real go-to option for you. But what would you do if you couldn't do it?
Yeah. I love what you said there. I mean, piecing the bits of the jigsaw, the puzzle together, is important, isn't it, as a coach developer, to help people. And often it is simple. It's like the moment Danny Newcomb said to me, Rusty, we only control two things, practice design and coach behaviours. And I thought, well, that's pretty helpful. That's definitely helped my puzzle a lot, because there was a lot of dots. And now I could...
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. CompoundHERS.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At least I know they're connected, but I can put them into a couple of buckets. That's super helpful for me. And then the other thing you reminded me about, which I loved, I was at Palace the other day and chatting to Hazy. And I took a couple of students with me who studying at Bath Uni. Fair play to them. I went to the uni and I said, if anyone wants to reach out, reach out. And Alan reached out. And last week he went with me to Arsenal, Palace and St. George's Park. And he said, Hazy, if you were a young coach and wanted to get better, what's the one thing you would do? He just said, find people that are better at coaching than me and go coach with them. And so this kind of expertise is defined by the peer group. And if you're 3 out of 10 and you're the best in the area and everyone thinks you're a 10, that is problematic. It's made me think a little bit. Sorry, he keeps coming up on my Instagram timeline and I really want to ask him if he wants some feedback. But the Fit for Football guy on Instagram, I've been thinking a bit about the what and the how. Like, I agree with lots of his messaging. I think he speaks to kids in a really condescending, pointing your finger type way, which I think is fascinating. Hopefully not too many people are copying it. That is how you get better, isn't it? You go and get feedback, you chase feedback, you find people that are better than you. You work with them. That's the reason I went to work with England, because I wanted to go and work with John Fletcher and Peter Walton. Very simple. And way less money. As away from home, way more, but I knew that this is what I needed to do to become a better coach.
That is a challenge though, isn't it? Because, you know, you've gone into that situation identifying, right, these are two individuals that I want to work off or learn off, for whatever reason it might have been. But actually that's another massive challenge for coaches, because, you know, I completely agree. You know, if you're, you know, it's that whole concept of, you don't want to be the smartest one in the room too often. You know, you want to get around people who know more than you or know other things. And I think the challenge for a lot of coaches, especially if you go back to that question of, you know, what would you change about, you know, if you was a younger coach? Well, actually, the younger coaches or the less experienced ones don't even probably know what they're looking for, what a good looks like, right? So the thing that they can gravitate towards sometimes, which might be, I guess, a risk is, well, this person's been doing it for 15 years. They know what
they're
doing.
Well, this guy's got 172,000 followers on Instagram.
Exactly that. Exactly that. So it's like, well, they must know what they're doing. And it's interesting because sometimes I'll go and observe coaches, and some of my mates coach in grassroots football as well. And I just go along and observe sometimes. And it's so fascinating to hear the parents sometimes talk to me about their observations and their perception of what's happening in their session. No idea who the hell I am, by the way. And I've got no idea that I'm a coach developer and other bits around it. But it's interesting because sometimes they'll ask me, oh, so what do you think? And I'm thinking, yeah, it's all right. But, you know, because you don't want to dismantle what's going on in their minds. But really, I'm thinking, gosh, there's a lot of things here that I probably wouldn't be doing myself.
Yeah. What's the benefit of shouting at kids that loudly? What are the other options? I wondered, obviously, I think he's hilarious, Steve Bracknell on Instagram. I'm sure you've seen it. But maybe some people think it's like real and it's not parody. You know what I mean? So it is, yeah, working all that stuff out is part of the process. I was very, very lucky that when I started coaching, there was good people. Kevin Powering, got a coach of Ben Ryan. Like, I was working with good people. And you just kind of, maybe I've taken that for granted. Like, the first mentor I ever had was probably one of the, well, definitely in rugby, the best mentor there's ever been in rugby. I was pretty lucky there. Now that I reflect upon that moment.
But the thing is, the best is, that's also individual, right?
Yeah.
It's also perception. Yeah. I don't know, for you, you know, it was the right thing for you. And I think I remember having a debate with, it's an ongoing debate I have with one of my good mates. He's a twin. And growing up, he just seems to be convinced that actually he was just the better footballer. He was just born that way in comparison to his brother. And I said, okay, cool. And I said, you know, what's your thought process, bro? Why do you feel that? Because, you know, we played at the same clubs, we played at the same, you know, coached by the same players, blah, blah, and all the other stuff with it. I said, yeah, but Have you ever thought that the coaching that you received and the environment you're in was just better suited to you and not him? And he goes, no, I was just born better. So it's fascinating because actually I've got, you know, because I'm always looking for more solutions and exploring more problems, I often kind of challenge coaches to think about, well, what would happen actually if you've got 100 players, and let's just imagine each one of these 100 players is a lock, but you've only got 99 keys. Well, there's one door that's not going to open. But actually, this is where I guess the effectiveness and the deliberate and I guess intentional identification of collaboration with other coaches in personality, skill sets, and all the other stuff can come in. Because actually, me working with Rusty might have that one key that I'm never going to be able to open, right? And I think that piece is really important. So it's really understanding your skill sets as a coach and understanding the drawbacks to that. And, you know, it was interesting. You mentioned it a couple of times about the session planning aspect of it. And what's two things that you change or one thing you take away? Just curious to maybe explore that a little bit more in terms of how much of that is influenced by your own experiences to know that actually the two and the one piece, or and how much of that is you then you link into the coaches to challenge them around their own perceptions of, right, what they can bring to the table and maybe what's hindering the session for them from their own skill sets and their attributes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and to go back just quickly to your lock and key analogy, I'm generally very good at recognising the people that I haven't got the key for.
Yeah.
Way quicker than I used to. So I used to think, I got the keys to everyone. I'm like, I'm like the locksmith. And then I realised I just wasn't the locksmith. And I go, no, you need to go and speak to this person, or you need to get connected with this person, or Suzanne Brown, or Kirk Vallis, or Tom Hartley, or whoever it might be, or John Fletcher. And I have definitely not, at this moment in time, quite got the keys to help you. And the keys might be time and resource and other things as well. I had a kid yesterday ask me about, oh, could you do individual coaching with me? And I thought, I could, but I find individual coaching really boring. So I was like, look, I'll find someone for you. I would love to. But it just doesn't interest me in the slightest, quite frankly.
Just to pause you for a second, Russ, that's really important, though, isn't it? Because if it doesn't interest you, they're not going to get the best out of you anyway.
Mate, honestly, I'm going to be, it's going to be like pulling teeth for me. So I could probably blag it for one or two sessions and then it will become apparent in my face. I mean, the planning stuff is just, I guess, is interesting to me because it's like really important, isn't it? Like, especially if you're working with co-coaches, it becomes vital. So if there's two or three of you and you haven't planned well, it's really obvious. So there's one coach coaching and two on the side doing keep your peace. There's one coach saying one thing, another one shaking their head. There's two coaches like coaching the hell out of the best player. And there's a little kid in goal who's like 4'6" playing in a full size goal, not knowing what to do. And no one's coaching him or her. So like, I just think planning just because, you know, when you haven't planned well, it becomes very obvious. And by planning, I mean like prepared well. So I would generally like, I'd be in lots of, you know, what do you think planning is? When planning, what are your top four considerations? Rank them. I'm just curious. And again, very rarely would I meet coaches that are really aligned on it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were to measure one thing this season that would tell you that you're winning and it isn't winning, what would it be? Because clearly, like, your intention drives your planning. And again, you know, what's the three most important things for your team this season? I would do that out of season. And, you know, coaching the under 13 girls and call. Everyone agrees what are the two or three things we're going after that aren't winning, because without that, we also can't plan. So if one of the most important things is confidence, that our players finish this season individually and collectively more confident in themselves than when they started, that would have implications for planning. If it was to win every game, that would have implications for planning. We would probably split up the kids and send all the kids down to the shallow end, or we might tell them not to bother turning up for training, or we would tell them to bring their tracksuit because they're not coming off the bench at the weekend. So I think this, and the stuff at the top is important. Agree that stuff. What are we going after? And then the layer below that for me is probably, and what are the skills? So I worked in the England pathway where we are going for, we want to create skillful, adaptable players. Okay, what are the skills? So creativity, awareness, resilience, decision-making, self-organising. So then there's implications, isn't there? So if the C is creativity versus if it was C was compliance, we would plan differently. If there wasn't a D for decision-making, we wouldn't coach decision-making. But then we've then got to go, okay, well, if decision-making is important to us, how does a really good conversation around decision-making and training look like? Show me, coach, like, let's practice this stuff. How do we coach decision-making? Okay, if it's self-organizing is important, what are we currently doing in our planning that means that we're preventing self-organizing? Oh, maybe we should invite some players into the planning process as well, see how they would plan. It might give them the opportunity then to self-organize a little bit more. So I think you've got to agree some stuff at the top first, and then again, then I'm interested in. And for some people, that might be, we've got to win at the weekend. Like Rusty, we need to win at the weekend. Cool, that's fine. Then we can plan accordingly, can't we? And probably, you know, spend perhaps less time being divergent and more time going, this is what we're going to do at the weekend, and making sure that we're able to coach in a sticky way. So, yeah, I guess I'm just fascinated in planning and just, you know, who leads it? How does it work? And again, a bit like we chatted about that coach-developer relationship, I think it's an evolving thing. I think we work it out. And in the same way, and that's why I, you know, go, okay, if we had to add one more column to the session plan, what column would we add? Or if we had to take one of them away, which one would we take away? I'm just genuinely curious, because I think that if you don't get this stuff right, then, you know, so I was at Henley College the other day, and there was the football and the rugby, and I was just talking about coach challenges, and the rugby just said, yeah, we've got a column in our session plans. Everyone puts in their coach challenge for the session. Football don't. That's fine. They've got some different columns, and they might decide they want to add that and take another one away. But I'm genuinely interested in it, because, like, if you do it really well, the flip of this is, if you are coherent, plan together, know what everyone's doing, on the same page, guess what? Sessions are class. Kids will be like buzzing. Kids will be learning. Coaches will be getting better. Like, the flip side of it is like this, isn't it? And if you don't, it's just like we're doing the same thing 15 minutes in on a Tuesday that we did last Tuesday, which is, again, is really common.
Yeah, no, it's just got me thinking about it. So my my oldest son, he's in reception at the moment, and I was fascinated because his school, I don't know if this is normal practice now, to be honest, but every class has at least three teachers in it. Every single class has at least three teachers in it. And that's, and I every time I've come in, I notice that different teachers, although you've got the main head coach, head teacher, if you like, in each classroom, it's not always that person that's leading the group. And it's got me more curious over, you know, every time I do the school run and drop them, I think to myself, you know, I'd really love to sit down with them at some point and just go through their planning process. How do they decide who's going to lead? How do they decide who's going to take charge of which session? Is it a case of actually they've got their own challenges amongst themselves? One of the things I've been playing around with recently, and I've been saying to coaches, is that try not to fall into the trap or the habit of, right, a coach developer's coming to see you, just go and coach your favorite session. Because that's not really going to help you, because that's something that you're confident with, that's something that you're excelling with. And not to say that it's not important to continue to develop those things in your strength areas, but actually, are you really getting help around the things that you know you're struggling with? So one of the things I've kind of take it on board from what you said as well, like, you got to kind of take that own approach yourself in terms of, how am I going to get better? So I'm, even now, when I go out and deliver different courses and I'm working across different coach development activity, I'm constantly challenging myself, okay, well, what's that one thing that I'm going to change? Or what's the area that I maybe, I've probably not maybe vocalized enough, but I know I'm probably shying away from a little bit too much. And really just try and chuck myself in that deep end and, you know, be vulnerable, because actually that's part of, you know, building your credibility, both as a coach and a coach developer, right? And being, you know, being able to be vulnerable and actually, you know what, we're all human, we can get it wrong. I'm not the number one, you know, and not, none of us are, but actually what can we learn from the reflection and actually the efforts gone through in trying to get it right, if that makes sense?
Yeah, even, I love what you said there, and even you saying to a coach, I'm going to try an experiment today, if that's cool with you. Like, It might not work out, but I'd love to give it a go. I like this kind of scientist mindset around trying experiments. And then when you were talking about the school, yeah, they're probably planning for individuals way more than we are in coaching. I think of every session as individuals. So who are the players that are going to need our support the most today? Who's going to need stretch? How are we going to do that? Like, I imagine schools are way more skillful at that. And one of the things that, and again, maybe for coaches to reflect upon, is like, across most of the pathway programs that I work with, the feedback from the players is we do not have enough individual interactions with head coaches. And that is often because they are running activities. So what you described there in the school of actually the assistant teacher is going to lead the lesson probably allows the head teacher, I guess, of that age group to go and have individual interactions and impactful ones, because they're probably worth, you know, 3 to 5 times as much as the assistant coach interactions. And so, everyone always kind of jokes about that. They love being an assistant coach, get to hang with the players. Well, actually, the head coach should probably be doing that, a little bit more. And I guess with kind of, you know, just run a camp for the last 3 days, and neurodiversity is not invisible. Lots of it is, obviously, but I've seen, there's been some really great individual challenges for me as a coach to work with individuals. So one kid who we've just been creating imaginary stories for 3 days whilst I've been coaching, which has been a good challenge for me, because that's just really capturing his imagination. And so, yeah, I mean, these are real challenges of coaches, isn't it? Like, we've got some kids with autism, we've got some kids, you know, and sometimes they don't even have a diagnosis, so that doesn't even give you some of the clues of, actually, Rusty, I really need information in advance. You know, I've had coached a girl up in the Northwest last year. You know, Rusty, I've got autism. That thing you just did, if you did it for much longer, that would have been really unhelpful for me. I'm like, oh my God, thanks for telling me. Like, I'm just guessing at this moment in time. Yeah, again, and maybe to tie back into planning, I think, again, we can, the easiest hack to this, just have a whiteboard next to the pitch. You know, watch Dan Carroll, coach at Bournemouth. Name, how do you want me to help you today? Which player are you going to play like today? That's so simple. We've immediately got them arriving with intention. I really want help with this. I want to play like this player. And then the interactions can come from them to you rather than you to them. And they're just painting a bit more of a picture to you, aren't you? Oh, I need a bit more help. I need information early. Or actually, I prefer some individual conversations rather than conversations in the group. Or, you know, I need a bit of help with this. I'm really struggling with it. I prefer a bit of time away from the game to practice that. So, yeah, again, I just think it's really simple. We not really simple, but, you know, we put a whiteboard. We ask those questions. We signpost early that I'm here to support you. If you need any clues or any help, please come and find me. I would love everyone to come and find me today. If everyone at some point comes and finds me and the other coaches today, at the end of the song, at the end of the session, we will treat you to a song.
Love it. You know, and that incentive is key, right? Because whatever it is, whether it's a song or whatever it is, you know, that is something, you know, again, I was talking to some coaches about this yesterday, thinking that, you know, whatever you choose to do with whoever it is you're doing it with, there needs to be an incentive for them. Otherwise, they're not going to be engaging. And, you know, like you said, if we go back to the example of you maybe doing one-to-one coaching with that young lad, you might get away, you might do it for 1 or 2 sessions, and then you realise this isn't for me. Even though you kind of deep down know we're ready before you started, but you know that concept of, you know, I'm willing to give it a try and see what it goes, but I already know my heart's not in this. And I think, you know, you have to find, right, what's going to drive the players' engagement. And I say it all the time, the players have to know why they're doing what they're doing, and it has to mean something to them. You know, I came across a post recently where and he spoke about Ruud Gullit at his time as a player at Chelsea, coach. They didn't mention the coach, but the coach basically put on a practice and asked him to do a Ruud Gullit turnaround. Said, "I'm not doing that because that's not what I would do if it was a game. You only want me to do that to make your practice work." And it's just like, and the thing is, players.
We need more Ruud Gullit in the world, because that's what a lot of players are doing that and not saying anything.
Yeah, 100%. They just get along with it. And I literally said to the coaches yesterday when I was speaking, so like, you know, thankfully we're just going to have some situations or many situations where we've just got good kids and they just want to listen and be and follow the coach, which is fantastic in one aspect. But actually, you might never know if they disagree with you.
Yeah,
because they don't want to be combative. They don't want to seem disrespectful. They, you know, they respect the idea of authority or you as a coach figure. But actually, it's a very dangerous place to be in, because if you're not checking and challenging their perceptions on that, and especially if they're not willing to come forward with their own views on it, you could be in a real problem. And, you know, it really got me thinking, and it kind of links back into the thing that we were talking about before we jumped online, in that. Let's, you know, it's a challenge that I've been throwing to coaches recently. Let's move away from themes. Let's not talk about, you know, passing and receiving or combination play and this and that, or attacking in the final third or whatever it might be. Let's just forget all of that. Let's explore areas and goals. And what I mean by that is, right, let's explore the area of the pitch that we're in. Okay, what is it that you're trying to do in that area of the pitch? Are you in possession? Are you out of possession? So, you know, as an example, a question I might throw to a group of players if I'm wanting to explore something. Okay, well, what does it look like to combine in the defending third, in particular in a central area? And let's explore that, because it's not about having a specific way of doing it, but having an understanding that this is where we're going with it.
Yeah, I mean, my bias is questions for sessions. It puts our brains into problem-solving mode. How can we win the big moments? How can we psychologically stay on top? How can we defend a 2-goal lead? How can we play out from the back against different types of defense? How can we ensure the opposition doesn't get many shots on goal? You know, whatever the questions are that the game asks of you, like, let's replicate them in training. And to the Ruud Gullit situation, I mean, again, cool, awesome, Ruud. I appreciate that. Like, what's next level of the game? So I see lots of people practicing on the wrong level of the game. So that, you know, how can we defend a 2-goal lead with 5 minutes to go? And then that becomes a 1-goal lead with 5 minutes to go. And or maybe it's then a 1-goal lead and we've got someone with a yellow card. All of those are valid situations from the game. And then coach within that. So then the challenge is always, like, the challenge for all of us is, when something's moving and it's dynamic, it's to understand the coaching skills you're going to use is the limiting factor, in my opinion. So if the coaching skill cannot be everyone in, what are we going to do? How are we going to, like, help learning? And I think we will both agree that the game is not the teacher. Like, a well-designed game can do a lot of your heavy lifting and stuff. However, you need to coach. So I think we've got, you know, in the middle of the game is the teacher and everyone in, listen to me, I'm going to talk about something that we can't even all remember. And we're going to talk about it. We're not going to show me. And we're not going to replay it. And we're not going to freeze that moment in time and blah, blah, blah. There's some coaching skills that are important, like freeze and replay and an old way, new way, and individual interactions with players and scoring systems and introducing the second ball and those things that are going to help us with learning. And that, I do think that's a limiting factor. I think the coaching craft of the best coaches I see, prompting. So Dan Carroll, again, at Bournemouth, give DC a shout out, like, just really good at coaching in the future. So imagine, again, maybe a good reflection for coaches, how much of my coaching is in the present? Pass, yes, pass, yes, pass. In the past, yes, why did you pass? And the future, yes, where's your next pass? Who do you need to be connecting with now so you can pass? Like, who do you need to be communicating with? Where are we going to trap them? Where are we going to trap them? So the kind of prompts for the future, probably an important part of coaching within the games as well, because the reality is often we know stuff that they don't know. And then the last bit that I think is probably worth referencing there is, like, just your off-the-ball coaching is so important. So we're often misdiagnosing problems. We only solve the problems we know how to solve. So we'll misdiagnose a first touch. We'll go, oh Yaz, your first touch is terrible, and it'll have been something that happened 5 seconds ago that Yaz was dead off the ball, and you didn't think about getting into a good position, scanning, you know, looking for the right things to then make your first touch like primo. And we'll misdiagnose it as a first touch. Then we go, okay, everyone in, because Yaz's first touch is terrible. We're all going to practice our first touch because Yaz is bad at it, we all need to do it. So I do think that kind of coaching skills within a games-based session, they are really important.
Mm. And something you touched on there about the idea of having a freeze. Now, I think it's become a bit of a topic of debate recently in a lot of conversations I've had as well, the effectiveness of that and whether it's the effectiveness of it, but more specifically, like the perception that that's an old school thing. We don't do that anymore. I think, well, actually, it's definitely got a place, in my opinion, and it's definitely got value. It's just how you use it and when you use it.
Yeah, I mean, probably a couple of options. One is I would call it goldfish bowl. So me and you step out. Yaz, just come and stand with me for 30 seconds and watch the game. Have you noticed your team off the ball? Like, how good do you think their communication is? Like, cool. Do you think you can help them? So that ability to see what's going on in the game, like we all do when we pay a ticket and we're a spectator and we go, oh, I wouldn't do that. What are you doing? Oh, my God. But then a freeze is like I think a freeze is worth like 100 times a huddle. Like, so we have a huddle. Generally, I speak. We don't do a show me, and we don't have a shared picture. And again, I started putting timings on it. So I timed across quite a few football sessions, and average time of a huddle was something like 4:45. The average length for a really good freeze is 15 seconds. And the freeze is just to go, boom, freeze. And then you then have loads of options. Defense, stay where you are, attack. If I gave you those 3 seconds back, get into better positions. Had a hockey coach that did this. I loved it. He went, put your stick down, go and stand where you wish you were standing. Have a look at how far away you currently are from where you were standing. And some people were only 2 yards away. You could, and then you'd get in a conversation, like, what's the impact of those 2 yards?
Yeah.
That is a significant impact. Or it might be a freeze, like, whoa. What's going to happen in the next like 10 seconds? How are we going to score? Oh, I don't know. Like, cool. Okay, everyone point to where the best space is. Cool. And actually, it would be really helpful for me if you showed me what really good communication would look like to help us get the ball to there. So I think we can just slow stuff down. We can see the same picture. And again, they can freeze it. So I coached in Ulster and the kids went, Rusty, we'd be way better if we froze it than you. I was like, you lot are bloody geniuses. So they said, so we were looking at a new way of defending. And they said, Rusty, we're going to freeze it 5 times when we think we're in really good defensive positions. Well, that's super helpful. Like, they're actually playing the game. They're also like checking everyone else's position. I go, freeze. Rusty, we think we've nailed it. We think we're in a really good position. I'm like, nah, brilliant. Shit. No, I'm joking. Yeah. I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. but no, I think it's a great point. And, you know, you mentioned there about the goldfish bowl and, you know, sometimes standing outside of it to look in. And I use the analogy of, you know, if you're in the painting or if you're in the frame, you can't see the painting.
Yeah.
I took players out of it and I try and explain to them like, the importance of the coach being able to freeze it and actually freeze it as close to possible, if not dead still, on what just happened. Because the little thing, like you said, you know, 1 yard here, 1 yard there, it changes everything. And I use the analogy.
It changes everything.
And I say to them, like, could you imagine if one stroke was different on, I don't know, a famous painting? It wouldn't be worth the same.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be worth the same. So whatever you're about to talk about on that one painting needs to be the painting that you're talking about and not something that's a version of it. Right. And I think it goes back to one of the earlier points you made, right? One of the, I guess, the first skills and most important skills is noticing. Can you notice that actually, no, that player, you know, it's gone from facing Rusty to facing this way. Actually, that changes everything. And it's, I think, that level of detail that you can go into. And I say it to coaches all the time, I'm currently working with a few coaches going through their UEFA B licenses. And they said, well, what level of detail do we need to go into? So, well, search for everything as possible. And then you'll start to see what level of detail is possible and what level of detail should get you through. And if you start searching for these things, I think you're going to be on the right track.
Yeah, I mean, again, just maybe coaches reflect on how well they think they coach off the ball. Like, Freeze allows people to develop awareness of their off-the-ball skills.
Mm.
It's just a coaching tool. I mean, again, simple. You know, I ask coaches this a lot. Oh, well, if you could have frozen the session three times, when would you have frozen it? And they all immediately go, oh, this bit here, this bit here, this bit here. I'm not telling you to freeze it like 50 times a session. If you could have frozen it three times, oh, here, cool. What stopped you? Oh, well, the S&C coach has got the GPS and we need to keep that. I'm like, I mean, what are we thinking about? Are we thinking about learning or are we thinking about GPS? Like, and of course, we're probably thinking about both. But I see this obsession with coaches looking at watches. Coaches looking at watches, going 2 minutes left, 1 minute left. No, freeze.
Mm.
Hang this in the Louvre. This is exactly what we were talking about with defence. Have a look at your teammates. Have a look at the positions we're in. This is what brilliant looks like. Play. Like, 10 seconds, done, boom. We needed to show a moment of excellence. Again, maybe a good coaching, you know, reflective question for coaches is like, how often in the session am I showing my players moments of excellence? And I don't mean me. I don't mean me showing to everyone how good I am at trapping the ball or whatever it might be. How often am I just pausing the session going, Yaz, that is what we're talking about. That is how you dictate in defence.
Mm. I think it's a great point. I talk about it all the time. In fact, that with coaching, the best way to kind of elevate and even connect the dots, you know, talking about moving around the ball and you know, off the ball coaching, actually a great way of doing that is actually by starting with what's happening on it, catching them doing that bit really, really well. Fantastic. Rusty, that was brilliant. But what does that mean for you now? And using that almost that praise as a platform to progress. And I think there's a great way to kind of bring those into it. But I think one of the biggest challenges for a lot of coaches is, and I'm sure you've come across this many times, you probably still do, they're in the middle of everything, so they can't see anything.
Yeah. If you like, there's just lots of stuff that we probably need to get rid of, scoring, refereeing, all that stuff, and think about. But again, we chatted about it earlier, didn't we? If the assistant coach, if you find an assistant coach, or you upskill an assistant coach, or someone you can trust to run a game, then it's really easy to coach. It's really easy to coach. If you are doing everything yourself and the others are stood around, not quite sure what they're going to do in the session, then you're going to find it really hard to coach. You're going to miss loads of stuff. You're going to watch it on the video later if you have video. And you're going to go, oh, I wish I'd done something about that. I'll go and speak to that player now. Well, it could have happened 2 hours ago. And they could have given them the feedback then and they could have done something about it. Instead, like, we've ended up with this really weird view of learning that we'll do it on the video later and we'll just talk about it and then it'll magically happen next time we get on the training pitch, if any of us can remember it. I just see coaches that are probably paying attention to and doing the stuff that, again, it goes back to planning, doesn't it? If you don't plan, if you don't think, okay, where am I going to stand in this practice? Where are the three or four most important places for me to stand? And I'll do that with people sometimes. Go, oh, like, if you could only stand in three or four places, where would you stand? Oh, no, you know, I want to be able to move around, Rusty. I'm like, you've been standing in the same place for the last hour. You have not fucking moved. Like, honestly, like, you are. And people, again, coaches aren't aware of that. I might, you know, you could do a freeze with the coach. You could go, freeze, call coaches, put your whistle down, go and stand where you wish you were standing now. Cool. Those 5 yards would make all the difference, wouldn't they? For God's sake, please think about where you're standing. It's influencing everything. It's your first touch. Sort it out.
And it's interesting because as you said it, I just thought to myself, just recent old conversations, observation I've had with coaches, and it's like, if you just move just there, you would see a whole lot more. But even that self-perception of, yeah, I like to move around, but you haven't moved.
Yeah,
I watched a coach, and I've got into a bit of habit of doing this quite regularly. Just, it doesn't have to be the whole session, just two 2-3 minute clips here and there throughout the session. Just tell me what you notice. And one of the coaches comes in and says, I talk a lot, don't I? I says, yeah, maybe, I don't know. What do you think? You know, if that's the question that you're asking yourself, maybe there's some truth to, you know, the underlying feeling that you have of it. But the question, more importantly, is not as if you're talking a lot or if you're talking too much, but actually, who are you talking for? And in that, I think that's another challenge that coaches have sometimes, is that need to have to feel like I'm having an input. And it oversights and, you know, maybe goes above and beyond actually having an impact. Or more specifically, the over-talking is actually having a negative impact and not the positive one you're hoping for.
Yeah, I guess what's your intent, isn't it? Like, silence can be really skillful. I mean, I've got a real preference for prompting initially. If I feel like I'm, you know, cool, who do you need to be speaking to? And then if people don't, I can then probably work back from there and go, okay, do they know what to say? Is there some stuff going on around hierarchy here that's prevent? You know, I might go, okay, cool, what's stopping us from communicating? Does everyone know the word for this? Oh, no, I don't know. Okay. Does everyone know everyone's name? Oh, no, I don't know everyone's. Okay, cool. Like, and then I've started establishing some stuff around some kind of frameworks around communication to help players with. And then I would help them with that. But it's, I just wouldn't step in to start with. Like, I just don't think that's that helpful. I definitely, you know, I'm same as everyone. I've got some coaching confetti. I've got, you know, NICE, which I use way too often and is probably not that helpful. There's not a whole host of things people can do with the word NICE. I used to say, does that make sense? I definitely don't say unlucky anymore, because if people repeatedly get 7 times 8 wrong and I kept saying unlucky, I definitely wouldn't be helping them. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we mic ourselves for the first time. We don't believe that it's our voice. We can't believe the stuff that we say. It's intention, isn't it? What was I hoping to achieve by that? How did I adapt that to that specific player? What other options did I think about? Just being really intentional around that. People just aren't aware, is my experience. Like, are you aware that you said, you know, this? Really? Did I? Oh, my God. Wow. Didn't realize that. Everything starts with awareness. Like, how, you know, like, much as though we hate it, like video, audio, like, it's, you know, you got voice notes on your iPhone, you put it down next to yourself, you listen to, you know, you can start with awareness.
No, I think you're spot on. I think it's just, you know, that if there's any reflective thoughts for coaches to have, it is around, well, how do I become more aware of what I'm doing? Rusty's been fascinating, man. Another fantastic conversation, but in the spirit of challenge, I'm going to throw one more question at you.
Go on.
So let's reflect back on this conversation. What's one thing that's challenged your thoughts, and what's one thing that you're thinking actually going forward? Yeah, I'm going to have to rethink that maybe.
It's always good to remind myself of stuff. So the gaps, so creating the timeouts for people is something that, because of some of the stuff I'm doing over the next few weeks, is going to be really helpful for me. So I've written that down as something I need to do again. And then also, I think I talk about it a lot, but maybe getting being even more explicit with planning and getting head coaches to plan like they're an assistant coach.
Okay.
You know, in inverted commas.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? So I have been sat in a few clubs and I've been like, is anyone else going to take a meeting, or is just the head coach going to take the meetings? Like, this is, you know, we might be missing the chance to develop other people. And that is also the reality of it. Like, we're not developing the other coaches. Probably those two things are, stuff that has kind of reminded me of. I've written a lot of notes, though.
Awesome. And I guess the final one is, what's one challenge that you throw my way?
Well, what do you think would be a good challenge for you?
I'm definitely thinking around coach development. I guess finding the right balance between the roles, educator, mentor, critical friend.
Yeah, maybe just ask you know, maybe for 2 weeks, just ask people at the start, what's the one thing you need from me, or design your perfect coach mentor or whatever it might be, and just see what information, you see if you get any helpful information. You only have to try. I mean, again, with the experiment mindset, you just try it for 2 weeks, don't you? And then if it works, it works. If it doesn't, if you asking people, what's the one thing you need from me as a coach, whatever, if that information is helpful after 2 weeks, you'll keep asking that question, won't you?
That's it. Really appreciate that, Rusty. I really appreciate your time today, man. It's a fascinating conversation again.
Thank you, sir.
There you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.